Its influence on the affairs of planet Earth, I think from the beginning of its recorded history, certainly up until now. And tonight we have some information for you to really chew on, if you will, a little bit, about the reality of the extraterrestrial on our nearest planet. No, I'm not talking about Venus or Mars. I'm talking about the moon. Would you believe that there are things perhaps going on the moon that defy explanation in any other terms other than the extraterrestrial is up there kind of rummaging around, doing things? Well, our guest tonight certainly thinks so, and he has some guests for it. I want you to say hello and welcome to Open Mind, Fred Steckling. Fred is a researcher and an author of a book of alien bases on the moon that's cram-packed with some incredible photographs and an awful lot of research. Fred, why did you get into and where did you get the idea that there are alien bases on the moon?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the many people that have written to me since I was on your show last year here.
Mm-hmm.
And the many letters I have received are very favorable, although there have been some which are not.
We always get that.
Naturally, because it's a controversial subject, and one has to count on that. To start out with, I have always been interested in astronomy and aviation. And I have studied the moon with several different telescopes for many, many years. Approximately 15 years back, I used a 12.5-inch cave reflector. And I've noticed already then that something was going on the moon that that cannot be explained. Lights, flashing lights, and often moving from one crater to another.
The lights do dance around from Tycho to Archimedes to all of the other craters on the moon.
Right.
And there's no real reason for that in a natural kind of way. There's no swamp gas up there, is there?
Well, no, it couldn't, because as we are told, there is no atmosphere, so gases could not stay in shape and move around like that, and especially to be seen from Earth from such a far distance. But with all the sightings that we had, including my son, which is here with me tonight, we observed three immense objects in the crater Archimedes many years ago. And after examining our lunar charts, none of such objects are recorded in there. So we knew that whatever we had seen was real. It was in that crater part on the bottom and the floor of the crater Archimedes.
What were the dimensions of these objects?
Oh, miles and miles long.
25 miles, 30 miles?
Approximately 20, 25 miles long. And
how wide? 8,000 feet? 10,000 feet?
Probably a couple of miles wide.
Like a cylinder?
Like a cylinder, yes. And there were three of them in Archimedes. And naturally, when we started our space program with the orbiter, lunar orbiter, first with the ranges and the lunar orbiters, I was curious to find out what we have photographed there. And after getting in contact with NASA in the late 60s, I obtained their microfilms from the Apollo landings and catalogs and studied over 10,000 photographs carefully and then ordered these photographs by number, enlargements, and picked out those for my book, Alien Bases on the Moon.
Now, Fred, certainly NASA officials are looking at these photographs, too. Why aren't they seeing these things and reporting them to the public? Because if there are alien bases on the moon, isn't our government going to tell us about that?
I don't think so. Not just right out there. Because, you know...
Amazing. Why not?
Well, you know about the UFO situations. We have had them with us for so long now, and we have never really received an official statement. Perhaps the national security, perhaps a military cover-up. There are many suggestions why this has not been told to the public. Perhaps they are afraid the public would panic when they are told that, well, we went to the moon and we've seen immense objects, immense vehicles moving around, not built on Earth. Then the people may be frightened. That's possible, although I don't believe so. I think the people should be told what we have found up there.
Well, since you were here, there have been a number of the Apollo astronauts on KABC. Pete Conrad was one. Michael Jackson asked him about it. Pete Conrad says no. That's a lot of baloney.
Mm-hmm.
That nothing like that happened. Michael even read him a little bit of the transcript where he was describing an object that was flying along with them that just took off in another direction. And mm-hmm. Conrad said, well, we were just joking with Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, for 2.5 hours, this joke took up an awful lot of their time. Why are the astronauts not coming clean? We've asked Edgar Mitchell about some of the incredible pictures that were taken on Apollo 14. And he says, well, that's just a lot of hooey. We didn't see anything up there.
Well,
why are the astronauts not coming clean?
They're military men. They are high commission officers. And they have their responsibilities and probably were ordered to secrecy. And there are many experts that have admitted they have seen something up there. I'm sure you're familiar with Mr. Chatelain's, Maurice Chatelain, who wrote the book Our Ancestors Came from Outer Space.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was a government scientist or NASA scientist in charge of Apollo communication. And in his book, he states quite openly that our Apollo flights have been trailed by UFOs to the moon, that we had them there on the moon when we landed. And why would such a man, with so much knowledge, make such a statement? He must have first-hand information. I'll give you an example here. Donald Sistra, chief of NASA publication in Washington, D.C., made this revealing statement. During the Apollo manned flight missions, there were sightings from the spacecraft which our astronauts were unable to explain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if the astronauts have now a different explanation, well, that's up to them. We know we are not told the truth about many things.
Well, frankly, it sounds to me like when the astronauts try to explain things, what we're hearing is a debriefing piece of rhetoric that they are supposed to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And they will tell it if they're on these microphones or anybody else's microphones. Why?
Well, I don't know. Some time ago, I met Dr. Fred Bell, who also worked for NASA. And he obtained my book, and he liked it very much. I was told by people that know him quite well that he was going to support it. And Dr. Bell stated, the astronauts have kept silent about UFO encounters because they are trained to believe it is a matter of national security. And Dr. Bell admitted that he had seen photographs of UFOs taken by the astronauts. It is generally accepted by the scientists that the government of Earth hesitate to admit that we really are defenseless against advanced beings from another planet. So, you see, that's how the wind blows.
Hmm. An associate of mine, who I have a great deal of confidence in, spent a whole afternoon with Admiral Alan Shepard and asked him point blank. And with no emotion in his face at all, no twinkle in his eye, Admiral Shepard denied that he was aware of anything other than what they expected to find on the moon.
Hmm. Well?
And this was in a very private conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you believe? Do you believe that we are told the truth?
No, I don't.
Well, okay. Me either.
I have seen a lot of evidence to the otherwise, but I do want to point out that the astronauts themselves, that the NASA officials, for the most part, although some now are beginning to talk in other areas,
mm-hmm.
That the presidents of the United States, that the Congress of the United States, that the members of the Defense Department, that our government is not telling us anything. Now comes another question. If they're keeping it a secret, it is probably one of the few secrets that our government has ever been able to keep. Somehow or another, secrets are not very well kept by the United States government, but this one is.
Not really, because if it would, then books like mine and other books on this subject.
And George Leonard's, yes.
George Leonard, somebody else is on the moon, and then another gentleman which I know also, Moongate, mm-hmm. Bill Bryan. They have collected evidence that there is something going on. And if we would have a total blackout of information, everything classified, it would be impossible even to gain this information that we have received. So I believe that there is a cover-up, but not as severe as most people feel, that the information is available, the pictures are available, if you know where to order them. And are
the pictures you order now any good?
Well, that's another matter. I've received many letters. I'm in contact with amateur astronomers from all parts of Earth, and I received very nice letters from them. As a matter of fact, some gentleman here from Los Angeles writes to me. He says, thank you very much for receiving your book. I enjoyed your appearance at the Open Mind program, and he enjoyed my book very much. And he is making me aware of this immense cover-up of the fact that in the Sea of Crisis,
mm-hmm.
in the Cape Agaram Sea of Crisis, is an immense structure. And this structure is so miles in size and looks like a combination of a Van de Graaff and a generator and a Tesla coil, kind of a very large tower with a huge ball on top.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen it myself, although it's very difficult to photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it is there. And he says to me, this gentleman, he says, the photographs that he has ordered to confirm his observation are sometimes retouched to delete the structures. Okay, so he makes a statement. I've never made that statement that NASA retouches photographs, but I'm hearing it from other researchers that do compare the photographs and the observation.
Well, we know that at Greenbelt, Maryland, that they have a very large department there that
yes.
does nothing but retouch photographs. I mean, that's what they're there for.
I've seen it. I visited Greenbelt, Maryland.
So we can say unequivocally that NASA retouches government domain or public domain photographs. So that you won't see them. Now, you can order some of the vintage photographs of 1976 and 1977, and they will show you one thing. You can order them today, the very same photograph, and the shadows are longer. And we are being lied to by NASA.
Well, during the late 60s, I was invited to go to Greenbelt, Maryland. And we spoke to 22 scientists and showed them UFO movies and motion pictures of them.
Mm-hmm.
Not only movies that I had received from people, from other people, but also what I had taken in Germany during 1966. And when we walked by the retouch department, I asked one of the scientists, and I said, "Sir, tell me, what is this all for?" He didn't answer. And I said to him, "Well, if you guys have nothing to hide, then what is this all about?"
Mm-hmm.
You see. And incidentally, it is the Greenbelt, Maryland people from where I got my photographs and my microfilm.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I have my material from. You see.
That's true. That's where most of it comes from.
And I find that the early pictures that were released, they show more details of things, as you say, than the pictures of today. Last Sunday, I seen a gentleman, with whom I'm well acquainted. He came to visit me, and he showed me some fantastic findings that he had examined on large lunar orbiter pictures. And he showed me also a couple of pages he torn out of an aviation magazine of the 1960s, which show true color. That shows craters. Some of them are beautiful blue in color.
Mm-hmm.
And in one crater, we counted 16 dome-shaped objects, all connected with tubes to each other with a magnifying glass.
Well, if you listen to the transcripts of the Apollo conversation, they talk about the dome-shaped structures that are all over the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll want to get into that. We're talking about the moon tonight. Fred Steckling is my guest. He's written an incredible book for you to read. It's called Alien Bases on the Moon. We'll be telling you how you can get that book in just a few moments. But there is a lot more going on the moon, it would seem, than most people think. It's not just green cheese. We'll be back in just a moment. That there is activity at this moment going on the moon?
I am very much convinced. As a matter of fact, the last 5-6 months, I used our 17.5-inch reflector to study the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen in the crater Artistillus a large object that was there for 4 nights, and 5 smaller ones that looked whitish in color and egg-shaped.
Oh, the X drones, the famous X drones.
No, not X-shaped, but egg-shaped.
Oh, egg-shaped.
Like
yeah.
chicken eggs. It's kind yeah. of a shape. And during one of these nights, there were 5 lights on the bottom of the crater plateau
mm-hmm.
that were flashing, giving off light. So, also in the Sea of Crisis, I observed some flashing lights. And a few nights ago, I detected a tunnel between 2 craters that is not supposed to be there. Oh, it's about 20 miles long, and it looks like it comes in 5 sections.
A tunnel?
Yeah, some kind of like a tunnel or a tube.
A tube.
Yeah.
How do you see a tunnel, you know, is what I was thinking.
Well, a tube, kind of, yeah.
yeah.
Kind of a long object, you know, that goes between these 2 craters. One unnamed crater and another smaller crater.
Hmm.
And we took some pictures, slides. They did come out quite good, but not as good as we wanted to. We have to experiment with more high-speed film
mm-hmm.
on this. So I know there's something going on right now on the moon, and it is not us, because I have maintained many times that there's no government on Earth that can build vehicles that are miles in length, as have been observed up there, and economically it would be not feasible.
Well, you have some incredible photographs of a machine of incredible dimensions.
Yes.
Incredible is the wrong word. That means unbelievable. Let's say astounding dimensions. That is terracing away at the rim of a crater and throwing lunar soil high into the air, and it's trailing off for miles and miles behind it.
Correct.
And these are photographs that have been taken by our government, who doesn't want us to see them.
Well, I have over 120 photographs in my book, and the people that are interested to order this book, at the price is $9.95 and $1 for postage and handling, and it may be ordered from GAF International in Vista, California, P.O. Box 1722, and the zip code is 92083.
Now, there are some people, since you were here last, that have read the book that disagree with some of your readings of the movies, of the pictures, and perhaps they'll get a chance to come in and discuss that with you tonight, and we certainly welcome those who have looked at them and studied. I've talked to some of you, and it's your time to, you know, to draw it out with Fred. He's here. Let me give you the numbers. All of the numbers in Los Angeles end with talk, T-A-L-K. In Los Angeles, your number is 520. In the San Fernando Valley, 990. In Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena, 244. Out in the San Gabriel Valley, your number is 448. Down in the South Bay, that's, that's Rolling Hills and Torrance and Manhattan Beach and Hawthorne down in there, El Segundo. Your number is 679. Long Beach, San Pedro, Paramount, Compton, Lakewood, Downey, your number is 639. In Orange County, if you're in the 619 or the 714 area code, your number is 750. And if you're in the 213 area code of Orange County, your number is 448. And we'd like for you to get in here and talk to Fred, whether you agree with him or disagree with him. If you've read his book, if you're just interested about what's going on the moon, we want to give you an opportunity to find out more about it. And we'll get to our callers and Fred Steckling in just a moment. Steckling is with me, the author of some of Alien Bases on the Moon. And we want to get to our callers, Fred, and we'll get to what is in the book. But we have Ken on the line. Ken, welcome to Open Mind.
Oh, thank you very much, Bill. Nice to talk to you. I've been a listener to your program ever since you first had Wendell Stevens on, and I'd like to thank you very much for a very enlightening show.
Well, you get a gold star, and thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Hey, first, my first question for Mr. Steckler, I believe his name is.
Steckling,
I'm sorry. The question was, how can you tell if an object is a cylinder on the moon? Because a cylinder can be looked at from many different angles, and it can be seen as a circle, as a square, as a diamond, a rectangle, and many other geometrical shapes. How is he able to tell and differentiate from these shapes?
Well, it's difficult, I admit. If you have the proper conditions, seeing conditions, and you have a fine telescope and use about 800 or 1,000 power, you can make out quite some details, especially by studying the shadows. You see, if in the crater would be three objects which are flat, two-dimensional, like a piece of cardboard, for instance, you would not make out shadows. But when you can see shadows reflecting from these objects, then you know that they must be cylindrical, or at least square, you know. But they have to be high enough to cast shadows.
Hmm. Okay. I think I'd bring up here. I had been able to meet with Apollo astronaut Jim Irwin,
mm-hmm.
who was, I believe, was on Apollo 15. And I'm 16 years old, but don't let my age get in the way, because I'd been able to speak with him. And,
I have a lot of respect for 16-year-olds. They're like 25-year-olds used to be. So don't feel bad about that.
Thank you very much. I had been able to speak with this gentleman, and at our school we had two different assemblies. And I'd gone to the first assembly and spoke with him after that, and he gave me this, I said to him, have you ever seen any flying saucers going around the moon type of it, you know? Or maybe I didn't say flying saucers, I said any kind of alien spacecraft. And he gave me this militaristic, you know, that real diplomatic and yet very authoritative no sound. And I said to him, well, did you ever see any unidentified flying objects? And he said, yes. At which time it sparked my interest. And I said, well, do you have any information on this? And Jim Irwin, being a very religious man, in fact, if I remember right, he was climbing Mount Ararat in search of Noah's Ark.
Yeah, he was over there just last 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. He gave me some information, and it was kind of interesting to me.
Now, he gave this to you personally?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And it was like little pamphlets made out by his high flight organization. And it talked about how astronauts have not seen 15-mile-long spacecraft that are 3 miles long or 3 miles wide. And it talked about how these astronauts did not see it. Now, what was interesting to me was that it had never entered my mind that they had seen these things in the first place. So why were they saying no to something that I had, you know, it hadn't even entered my mind?
Well, it may have entered somebody else's mind.
Yes, exactly.
Ken.
Exactly. But I had gone back after the second assembly, during a nutrition break, I think it was, and I spoke with him further. And yet when I questioned further, I got kind of a smile on his face, and as if saying, well, you're on the right track, but I can't say anything, exactly what you were talking about. But, you know, it's too bad that if this has occurred, that they had to be put in the middle of that kind of a situation. I'd gone down to Florida, in fact, this past summertime, to view the 8th space shuttle launch, and covering for a local paper down here in Orange County. And I spoke with Hugh Harris, who in the past had been the voice of launch control. Although I didn't confront him straight on about that moon issue, he seemed to be very forward-looking in terms of going back to the moon in the future. And I said to him, well, you know, would you like to go back into space yourself, up into space himself? And he said, certainly I would love to do that. And I'm sure there are a couple others around that would like to do that too. Just to experience it, but, you know, it's kind of interesting, the paradox that confronts us at this time.
They still get arm's length whenever you start talking about what's going on the moon.
Yes.
The astronauts and the NASA officials, don't they?
Yes. The other question I had...
Make it quick, because there are a lot of people stacked up in front of you here.
You bet. This is my last question. And the question was, if your guest has seen these these shapes on the moon, how come other astronomers have not been able to see the same thing? Maybe perhaps they have, but...
Good question.
Well, there are many, many that have. I'm in contact, as I mentioned earlier, with many, many astronomers, amateur astronomers, and these people do not have to rely making a living for a university or for the state college or something. And they confirm my suspicion. They are sending me photographs, charts of the moon, drawings, pictures of objects that they are seeing all over the world, from Australia, from Las Vegas, from Wisconsin. These letters are just coming in. Now, why do the professional astronomers don't come out? I don't know. Perhaps they don't want to make waves.
Yeah.
You know, so...
They don't want to interfere with a security position they have. If they're working for a government-funded or perhaps even a privately-funded observatory...
You see, the objects on the moon...
They have to be careful.
Right, these many, many sightings on the moon of these phenomena, they have been there since long, long before we even had a space program. As a matter of fact, I have a magazine here from NASA, which is called Apollo Over the Moon, published in 1978 by NASA from the government printing office. Mm-hmm. And they say here in the crater Aristarchus, which is 43 kilometers in diameter, has been the site of frequent transient lunar phenomena.
Huh.
Temporary changes in color, brightness, and other little things that move around there. So even NASA states that in this magazine.
I have a feeling, Fred, that if someone were to build an observatory with a very good telescope on it in a very good location where it was away from the ambient light and the bad atmosphere, and it was devoted to studying what is going on the moon, and government money was not involved, or huge corporate money wasn't involved, that wouldn't want to have this happening also, that we would find a wealth of material there.
I think so, and I have found it so far just from the people that have small telescopes. Although the one that I have is 17.5 inch, and that's pretty large for an amateur.
Okay.
So it's a very fine instrument.
Ken, thank you very much. I appreciate
you
sharing that with us. All right. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Fred Steckling is with me tonight. He's the author of a book of Alien Bases on the Moon. He has the proof. He has the book. He has... certainly the conviction to get on our microphones tonight and talk to you. Some of you may not agree with him, and I think we have a caller coming up next which is going to challenge you just a little bit, Fred. And we're up for that, and we'll get to it right after this. Edward on the line. And, Edward, I'm seeing the word challenge come up all over my screen here.
Oh, you bet.
Okay.
You should have an overload, actually.
All right.
I am glad that Fred has come out with his book, because along with Somebody Else is on the Moon by George Leonard, we possibly have the only two existing works on that something strange is going on in the moon.
No, I think there's another one, Moongate.
Moongate,
yes. Yeah. Well, I'll look that one up, too. Who's the author, please?
Bill Bryant.
Bill Bryant. Thank you, Fred.
You're welcome.
Fred, my problem with your book is that it seems to be a self-published book, and it is very, very badly put together. I have in front of me a list of at least 32 plates that have wrong information on them. And in addition to those 32 plates, I have 49 photos that I can debunk as being nothing but hallucinations on your part, natural phenomena. And in front of me, I have 5 NASA publications, including a very heavy lunar orbiter photographic atlas of the moon. And I have been able to find 50 or so more of your photographs on these books that show that you did not do your research well and that you were ill-advised.
I tell you what, Edward, we don't have time to go to all 50, but let's take 2.
Okay.
Why don't you get your 2 most glaring ones, and you two jaw it out here for a few moments, okay?
Okay, let's go to plate 54, in which you say that there are 2 ponds or lakes on this photograph. And if you look at this lunar orbiter of the moon on plate 214, plate 24, you will find the full-size photograph of that which you used part of it, and it shows you that your ponds or lakes are strictly photographic emulsion printing errors. There are no ponds or lakes on the moon, and you devote a whole bunch of photographs and space to that, and all you had to do was look at these NASA publications to find that you were wrong.
Edward, wait a minute. You said there are no ponds or lakes on the moon. Now, you're going to have something to say that that's so. It's all right for you to say you don't think those are pictures of it, but you don't know that there are no ponds or lakes on the moon.
Okay, granted.
Okay, so, let's keep it square.
All right, I know that you did your research, I did my research. Before these pictures went into the book, they were studied by military, ex-military people, and some photographic experts, and they have found these things there that I have in my book. So I don't know what you have found. I know that in my book I mentioned that if 50% of the photographs I have in here will be accepted, that is pretty good. And if some of the pictures in here make the people think there's something going on there, that is pretty good.
I'm afraid you're using the wrong photographs. I have found many great photographs that should be looked at, but not the photographs that you printed. Let's go to plate 61. I look at the book again, The Lunar Orbiter, and I find...
Wait a minute, Edward. We didn't get that one all the way through. You say that was an emulsion...
Emulsion print error.
Yes, no
all
way.
Over this book.
I know.
No way. Not this picture, because it has been checked for that.
Well, I challenge to meet you anywhere you say with an impartial person, preferably Bill Jenkins, and I will show you.
I don't know anything about photography, so you need to get an expert there.
I have one of those NASA books that also says that these effects are photographic emulsion errors.
Is that a good criteria?
Well, all right.
If you know anything about photography, the basicness of that, you'll recognize that these are emotion process errors, and there's plenty of pages in this lunar orbiter atlas that show the same effects back and forth, in different pages. In plate 61, you use part of one of those split things to call that perfectly shaped crater and a 25-mile-long mount or hangar. Come on, give me a break, man. Look at the photographs in this book. You're wrong.
Well, did you study the shadows?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's even better. You say in another photograph, I wish I had this little better reference so I could jump right to it, but you point to a photograph that has a dome casting a shadow behind it, and I find that that dome does not exist, number one, and that the shadow is a crater behind. There's no dome there. It's on the print, on the negative.
Well, what about... Well, they're on my pictures. When I ordered mine from NASA, that was on it.
I got the same pictures, and I can show it to you. There's that dome that you say...
When did you get your pictures, Edward?
Pardon?
What year did you get your pictures?
These are NASA publications. The Lunar Orbiter Photographic Atlas of the Moon is dated 1971, which is right at the beginning. Apollo Over the Moon, A View from Orbit, and that's a beautiful book. It was 1978, and I found many strange things there. The moon is viewed by lunar orbiter.
Are those photographs, or are those with a rotogravure process? In other words, printed?
They're printed, of course.
Well, you see, I didn't use those. I have photographs.
Yes, you did. It's the same thing, man. I'm trying to tell you.
The rotogravure process, when you put it in print, really does do a little thing to a photograph as opposed to looking at the photograph itself.
Yeah, but look, he says that some of the natural formations are clouds, that they're UFOs, that they're bridges, and anybody with some common sense can look at these photographs and see that this is wrong, that these are...
Well, I said it could... I never make a statement that there are definitely... I said, it looks to me like this. It could be. You see, I left it open for the people to study these photographs, to instigate the public to get these photographs. I'm not hiding the fact that they should write to NASA, they should get these pictures, they should compare them, as many amateur astronomers have, and they have received photographs from NASA which are retouched and do not show what other pictures have shown that were ordered earlier. So there's a lot of confusion going on.
That is true, and what you say is true. But what I'm saying is that you should not have printed this book until you consulted with someone that knew about photography and had access to... I got these from the library, by the way, all these books. They're available to the public.
I think Fred pointed out that he did consult with a number of experts before he did the book.
Yes. I had a photographic expert that was stationed in Vietnam working for military intelligence, and he told me I have some very nice information in there.
Okay, so. You do. And some of your photographs are fantastic, such just like George Leonard's, but he also makes mistakes, and he calls things for what they're not, particularly on Crater Lovachowski, where you call it a cloud, he calls it energy, and all it is a high albedo photograph of the moon, because in the Apollo over the moon, it shows that same crater beautifully sharp photograph, and all it is a high albedo. Some
and what about, what about the shadow, then?
The shadow is a crater, would you believe, with some lava bleeding out of it. That's all it is.
Albedo rarely ever forms a shadow.
Okay.
No, albedo
okay.
is high reflectivity, and the moon is very highly reflective at different angles of the sun, and you get different effects at different times.
You see, sir, I respect your research very much, and also that you have criticism toward this book. I never expected that this book would be accepted 100% because it's a very controversial book.
But to have so many errors, particularly factual errors, where you have the wrong frame numbers, you have the wrong photo number, you have the wrong name for the crater, you say this crater is here when it's hundreds of miles away, you have the incorrect info, and when you say it's Apollo 10 instead of 8, you have the photos reversed.
Some of it is part due to the publisher who put the book together.
Yeah, you did. It's a privately published because it's your address.
I did not manufacture the book, would you believe it?
Well, Fred, I don't want to take up all this time because there's other people that probably...
Well, I tell you what, Edward.
I challenge Fred to meet me anywhere, particularly tonight. I'm hot and heavy to show him all these books and how he's...
Well, going. Probably tonight is a little tough to do that. It's a long way back to
you. Well,
you're
not going
to
reach me. I have, my book can be ordered from Post Office Box 1722.
I got your book and I've written to you and... You don't want to get together with me because I'm going to show you you're wrong.
Hey, Fred, would you like meeting with Edward sometime? You two work it out?
If I have the time, I'm sure open for that. Yes.
Yeah, if he has the time. I'm making time. He's saying if.
Well,
he's here a couple of miles away. I could get in a car right now and show you.
Well, we have a show to do and do all of that sort of thing. I tell you what, you two get together.
I have your address and I have your letter at home and I'm going to...
In other words, you're copying out, Fred.
No, not really.
No, he's not copying out on you, but I want you two to get together and report back to me and what happened out of that meeting.
Could you give us a date to report to you by?
Well, I'll talk to Fred later this week, after you two talk and set up a time. Is that all right?
I hope it'll be this year.
Okay. Edward, thank you very much. You don't mind that. A little bit of controversy always works.
Right. It's on the moon. Studying the craters, some of them are so so neatly cut, perfectly round, that it seems to me very much like some mining is going on. Especially, I have one picture where you can see dust. You can see dust that is thrown out of the crater. And,
there's dust following the little X-shaped machines that are crawling on all over the moon, and we even find those X-shaped machines in the craters of Mercury, by the way. So
yes,
those X-shaped machines get everywhere. Okay, let's go to another question, another caller here. I believe we have Art on the line. Art, welcome aboard.
Yeah, good evening, Bill and Fred.
Good evening.
I've been working on some research for several years now, and I've gathered some proof, and I can prove right now that modern astronomy is several centuries behind where they should be on an accurate assessment of the celestial bodies. While the folks around here have been waiting for flying saucers and stuff to land, thinking that's the way advanced civilizations will get around in space, the real fact of the matter is that the really advanced civilizations are titans. They're the most gigantic living intelligent life forms there are.
Where do you get your information, Art?
I've been studying astronomy and some other things that deal with mysticism. I'm writing some research now that's going to reunite the supernatural side of the universe with modern science.
What kind of research and what are you using as the basis for, you know, these conclusions that you're passing on to us here?
Well, I found out a while back that seismic and climatic activity was intentionally created and intelligently controlled by the major celestial bodies.
How'd you find that out?
I was watching a pattern where certain events took place on certain days where it was set up in such a numerology pattern that only those who were being studying numerology would have noticed it. And I noticed, like, especially for the earthquake of Selmar. It happened on an all numerology kind of day. A year was a nine.
So from numerology, you were able to come up with the idea that these were Titan beings.
Yeah, I've also been able to predict where some of the areas they're going to wipe out as demonstrations of how much power they're dealing with.
Art, do you have a question for our guest here concerning his book, Alien Bases on the Moon?
Well, it's not more of a question as a comment. He's right now looking for little flying saucers and things that are tiny and things, but they can't see the forest for the trees.
Well, actually, he was just looking at the moon and talking about something that was going on up there.
I know, but what's really going on is this.
Well, I tell you, well, some other time perhaps we can get into these things that you're talking about. We kind of like to zero in on alien bases on the moon. Art, thank you very much for your call. We're going to go on to Dorothy now. Dorothy, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi.
Hello.
Okay, my question is, now all this talk, what was the location or area where these shadows were seen? You know, each of those things have numbers, may have names like the Maelstrom and all that. And if the astronomers send you these pictures, how come the agency that once these things suppress doesn't step in and say, hey, knock it off, don't do that?
Well, the
or
pictures...
just simply head it up altogether?
Yes, well, I have not received any photographs from professional astronomers. The ones that I get are from amateurs, and they are, thank heaven, still free to send material around living in the United States. So I'm getting this information from the freelance astronomers.
I see.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
And in my book, Alien Bases on the Moon, I have the pictures numbered. The NASA numbers and the locations are given in most cases, unless I could not locate them during my research.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help you?
Well,
some of the craters, he's named some of them for you, Dorothy, already this evening. There are Archimedes, there's things that's going on there. Tycho, there's going on there. Crater Dakar, there are many things going on there. Dakar is a very interesting crater, by the way. It's the activity and the buildings that seem to be just popping up on the floor of the crater Dakar.
Do you think that could be...
We're going to have to go, hon. There's our traveling music. We're going to take a break for news. It's Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Fred Steckling. Saturday night on KABC, I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Welcome aboard. Glad to have you and very glad to have Fred Steckling, the author of Alien Bases on the Moon. And that's what we're talking about. There's something else going on the moon, and most believe... Huge machines that are at work moving lunar soil around. Clusters of buildings. Huge sculptured monoliths. I think Ron Evans used to refer to them as the clover leaves as he was flying over the moon. But later, a close examination showed that they were fleur de lis, which is a very natural formation, of course, a fleur de lis. There are, according to Fred Steckling here, there are reservoirs of water. There are huge tunnels, or at least tubes laying across the surface of the moon. Perhaps there is some moisture up there. Perhaps there is some atmosphere up there. A lot of things about the moon that we just have not been told about. And yet the American taxpayers spent billions of dollars to send a contingent of Americans up there. And what they found out, we have only heard part of it. Why?
Well, Newton's law of gravity was found to be an error when we explored the moon. And the public, I would say, is kept many years behind the latest research findings. For instance, in astronomical circles, there was believed that the neutral point between the moon and the Earth was about 25,000 miles. Well, when we got there, we found it was not true, and it was about 40 to 44,000 miles. That changes the concept of gravity on the moon alone greatly, and...
The gravity of moon, or the...
The gravity of the moon.
Or the density of the moon.
Not only that, well, that hangs together. If the gravity is higher on the moon, about 50 to 60% of Earth, or half of ours, then the moon would be able to hold an atmosphere and would hold surface water in some places, and support vegetation and so forth. And Bill Bryan, for instance, with whom I'm in contact with, he stated that this is true. And he said he observed a movie, which I also studied very carefully, when the Apollo astronauts sit there driving around with their rover, that electrical vehicle. He said it's impossible with the speed that they were driving around that this vehicle wouldn't tip over unless the gravity on the moon is higher. And he also stated that when the historical jump was made by the astronaut, he was supposed to jump 3 feet. He only made it 18 inches, which means the gravity is higher on the moon. And the flag was waving. The dust that was thrown up from the tires of the vehicle was drifting in the
atmosphere.
So to call non-existent lunar atmosphere in a vacuum, this would never happen. So there's a lot of things that we haven't been told.
You know, I think when Pete Conrad was on with Michael Jackson, someone brought up to Pete about the fact that the atmosphere inside the spacecraft before they egressed the spacecraft and went outside was down to 1.5 inches per second rather than just pure vacuum.
Right.
And as if they knew that there was a little bit of atmosphere out there, and so they had to balance it with the atmosphere. Conrad said that that wasn't so, that that's just as far as their instruments went. But they did vacate the entire spacecraft of all air.
Ex-astronaut Brian O'Leary, he made a statement. He said that Pete Conrad and Alan Bean were playing using a metal cap, which was left over from an experiment, and they were playing Frisbee on the moon, and they were enjoying the how well this little Frisbee metal cap was flying around in the lunar atmosphere. That's what Brian O'Leary stated in his article.
So there may be some atmosphere up there. We've never been told about it. Why would something like that be hidden from us, that there is a little bit of atmosphere on the moon?
Well, the moon is a new frontier. If we set up bases there, most people know that NASA's lunar exploration was a military operation to at least 95%, perhaps even more.
Try 100%.
Let's say 100%. And that the military is always looking for new frontiers, new bases, new places to go. If they find life on the moon livable for our bases there, that would be a top-secret situation. They would keep it as much as they can from the public for their future experiments.
But according to you, there are other bases there for some other people who kind of feel that the moon belongs to them.
Well, yes, that's what Maurice Chatelain says in his book. He says that Apollo 13 was... they had some problems there with their oxygen tanks, and he heard rumors, that's what Chatelain says, that they had an atomic device on board which was supposed to be detonated on the moon. Now, if somebody is there, which I'm sure there is, I'm sure they wouldn't enjoy such a thing.
That was a no-no. They crippled the spacecraft to the point that it could not land on the moon, but did let the astronauts get back.
They heard all kinds of strange noises on their radio, transmissions from the area of the moon. As a matter of fact, radio transmissions were picked up from the moon and vicinity all the way back in the 1920s, but it was kept secret then.
Yes, Kaplan. How do we get a hold of the book now, Alien Bases on the Moon? You want to give that address again?
Okay, Alien Bases on the Moon, it can be ordered from GAF International, P.O. Box 1722, Vista, California, 92083, and it costs $9.95 and $1 for postage and handling.
Okay. You ready to take another call? We have Mike on the line. Mike, what's your question for Fred Steckling tonight?
Well, one of my first questions is his credentials. I don't think I caught his credentials as a scientist, as an astronomer, as a photographer. It seems that most of the time you'd like us to believe that NASA's lying and the colleges and universities are lying and the major corporations are lying, but they have credentials. I'd like to know Mr. Steckling's credentials.
A credentialed person can shield the truth as well as a non-credentialed one.
I'd like to know Mr. Steckling's credentials. It makes him an expert.
Well, okay. First of all, I never call myself an expert. Okay, I'm a researcher, right? And I'm an amateur astronomer. I'm also a pilot.
How about your academic background? Do you have a PhD in astrophysics?
No, I don't have a PhD, sir.
What's your academic background? I'm curious.
It's a high school and college.
What did you study in college?
Some science and...
You have a bachelor's degree from college?
I have a degree from Germany. You see, I graduated from the school in Germany.
And what was your specialty?
That was science.
Science?
Yes.
So you graduated from college with a bachelor's degree in science, and you want us to believe that you're more competent in determining what's on the moon with your 17-inch telescope than Caltech would be with their 42-inch telescope at Mount Palomar?
Mount Palomar doesn't look at the moon.
Oh, I see. What about, colleges or universities look at the moon? Are you the only one? It's interesting, you know, you mentioned amateur photographers. You give a great deal of credit to the amateur photographers. Aren't there professional photographers looking at the moon? Wouldn't it be a coup for a competent, renowned professional photographer to show the things that you show And one other quick question. Why don't you bring your findings to reputable media, the Times, the L.A. Times, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Time Magazine? Why don't you bring your findings to them and say, hey, the stuff on the moon, let everybody know. It seems we have...